everybody. This is Diane.
And Todd.
And we're here to welcome you to episode 7 of This Conversation Rocks.
D is for dinosaur. Or
and
dumb
I pitched
shit.
It, dumb shit. I pitched it as an atheist and a polytheist talk about evolution. So you don't get that combination very often. So here you go. And we're going to break with tradition. Actually, I thought that this Neil Gaiman quote from the book Good Omens is actually a perfect way to open the show tonight instead of close it out. So here we go. 11 years ago, current theories on the creation of the universe state that if it was created at all and didn't just start, as it were, unofficially, it came into being between 10 and 20,000 million years ago. By the same token, the Earth itself is generally supposed to be about 4,500 million years old. These dates are incorrect. Medieval Jewish scholars put the date of the creation at 3760 BC. Greek Orthodox theologians put creation as far back as 5508 BC. These suggestions are also incorrect. Archbishop James Usher, 1580 to 1656, published Annales Veteris et Novi Testamenti in 1654, which suggested that the heaven and the earth were created in 4004 BC. One of his aides took the calculation further and was able to announce triumphantly that the earth was created on Sunday the 21st of October, 4004 BC, at exactly 9 a.m., because God liked to get work done early in the morning when he was feeling fresh. That, too, was incorrect by almost a quarter of an hour. The whole business with the fossilized dinosaur skeletons was a joke that the paleontologists haven't seen yet. So, I wanted to start that out, or start us out with that, because James Usher is real. That date of Sunday the 21st of October, 4004 BC, with a time of 9 a.m., is actually real. He wrote that down.
Oh, is this the 6,000-year thing?
Yeah, this is the 6,000-year thing. So the way that James Usher came up with that date is that he supposedly counted all of the begats and begots in the Old Testament and added all of them up into generations and came up with that date as the date of creation. So this is kind of where some of the creationists come up with their numbers. And we're going to talk about all of the different creationists tonight, because I actually learned that there are different types of creationists, which I didn't know. So, by the way, according to that date, the Earth is a Libra.
Doesn't feel like it.
So did somebody suggest this topic to us, or was this just something that kind of came up in the course of thinking about topics this week?
Don't recall anybody saying we should do something this stupid, so.
Aha, so it must have been us deciding to do something this stupid.
Exactly.
So, by the way, we did get a suggestion for talking about minimum wage, and I wanted to let that person know that we are planning on talking about that. We just want to get a few more ducks in a row before we take on something that big. So we thought we'd take on something really small, like creationism and evolution.
Hey, Hannah. Oh, boy. Okay, so... Yeah.
Okay.
I gotta be honest. You know, we were talking about this a little bit before we started. You know, and I just do not want to bring a knife to a gunfight. So we're going to try to hold up our end here.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I don't know that we necessarily have to turn it into a fight. I think we can be fairly factual. I tried to do some prep, and I actually learned a lot of interesting stuff. I do want to mention a couple of things before we get started. So I tried to do a little bit of boning up on Richard Dawkins, because I confess to Todd that I haven't actually read anything by Richard Dawkins. Because, God, you know, a girl can only read so much serious stuff. So, he was actually recently on Neil Gaiman's podcast, which is called Star Talk Radio.
Yeah, except that wouldn't be Neil Gaiman. That would be Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, God, did I say Neil Gaiman?
I'm upset.
Sorry, Neil deGrasse Tyson. And it was the March 7th episode this year. And the episode just prior to that, it was actually published in two parts. And he was very interesting, and it was very funny, but it was a little distracting because the format of the show is that Tyson actually has comedians and scientists on. So I didn't get a great read of Richard Dawkins, but it was still worth listening to. So there you go.
I've always found his podcast to be a little hard because of the format.
Right. So, I did do some smoking around the internet tonight too, and it looks like there are some pretty good interviews on YouTube if people want to get a little better sense of who Richard Dawkins is. So, and he's, for people who don't know, he's a modern scientist who is really kind of the defender of the current theories of evolution. Is that fair? Would you say that?
I think that...
Among other things.
Yeah, I think that's probably understating it.
Right.
But, you know, he is completely an atheist. He holds, you know, no religious thoughts. He does not waffle. He debates people all the time. You know, and he's really interesting to listen to. His book, The God Delusion, is phenomenal. He is a biologist by trade, and The Selfish Gene is probably his seminal work on biology.
So, I have to tell you, one of the things that I did learn listening to him talk about evolution that I had not really thought about was that it's not necessarily just a progressive evolution forward.
Oh, no.
That we sometimes can have changes in genetics that are, for lack of a better description, backward if it serves the purposes of the species.
Right.
And I had never really thought about that, so that was interesting. Since we're talking definitions, I did find a nice, relatively simple definition of evolution from UC Berkeley. And the definition is, biological evolution, simply put, is descent with modification. This definition encompasses small-scale evolution, changes in gene frequency in a population from one generation to the next, and large-scale evolution, the descent of different species from a common ancestor over many generations. Evolution helps us understand the history of life. And then it says the explanation. Biological evolution is not simply a matter of change over time. Lots of things change over time. Trees lose their leaves, mountain ranges rise and erode, but they aren't examples of biological evolution because they don't involve descent through genetic inheritance. The central idea of biological evolution is that all life on Earth shares a common ancestor just as you and your cousins share a common grandmother. Through the process of descent with modification, the common ancestor of life on Earth gave rise to the fantastic diversity we see documented in the fossil record and around us today. Evolution means we're all distant cousins, humans and oak trees, hummingbirds and whales. So I thought that was a nice, fairly succinct description.
That is great.
Yeah, and yeah. I thought I can go ahead and put that link up on our Facebook page if people are interested in taking a look at that site. That's just one little piece from that site, and there are lots of links to kind of go forward if people want to explore that.
Yeah, absolutely. And do we have a definition of creationism?
Yeah, the devil do! Flintstones, meet the Flintstones. They're the modern Stone Age family.
We have a very lengthy definition of creationism. So, this actually comes from the National Center for Scientific Education, which is a site that is really pretty much devoted to tracking... I hate to describe it like this because I'm probably short-selling them, but tracking conflicts between evolution, creationism, evolution, and what are they calling it now? I'm struggling. Intelligent design. So it kind of is tracking legal cases, academic challenges. It was a really good website, and I'll put a link up to that website also. So here's what I didn't know. There are actually several different kinds of creationism. So they started out kind of as one type of creationism. Basically, at the end of the Middle Ages, Europeans pretty much agreed that all of the Earth's inhabitants that were, all of Earth's inhabitants were created in one place at one time in the Garden of Eden. And then about 400 years ago, when we entered into the scientific revolution, they had to figure out how to integrate the information that scientists started to discover when they were cataloging the fossil record. So they created this idea called progressive creationism, which was basically the idea that modern forms that in newer layers of soil, in newer layers of the fossil record, were products of a more recent creation. So they still held on to the belief that the Garden of Eden was the one locus of creation. I know, it's crazy, isn't it? But they decided that there were multiple episodes of creation. And then, as more and more fossils were discovered, and as the scientific revolution continued, they were eventually forced to give up the idea of Eden as the sole locus of creation. So they agreed upon the idea that there were six different centers of creation.
What does that even mean?
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? So they went from, there was one creation and it was the Garden of Eden, to kind of creating this idea that, okay, well, to try to accommodate the information in the fossil record, we're going to say that there were multiple episodes of creation and there were six different centers of creation on the globe. Sounds kind of interesting, right? I mean, I didn't realize that there had been that evolution in thought, but they actually were trying to accommodate things that were discovered in the fossil record during the time of the scientific revolution.
Just after they put Copernicus under arrest. Or not Copernicus, but Galileo.
Right.
Yeah, oddly enough, they liked Copernicus because they needed to figure out where Easter fell, but...
So then, in the early 1800s, this guy named Jean-Baptiste de Lamarck, who was a French naturalist, proposed a theory very similar to Darwinism. But he didn't have any direct observation to back it up, so people kind of blew him off. And then Darwin went on his journey to the Galapagos and actually had observation of different species and different evolutionary occurrences that he could document. And he kind of represented the final break with traditional beliefs. And this is something that I didn't know. The Church of England actually accepted the idea of evolution by natural selection within a few decades of the writing and publication of The Origin of Species.
Okay.
I know! I mean, I didn't realize that. So, you actually had a church saying that Darwin was right within a few decades of him publishing his book. So then we kind of move on to the idea of modern creationism. So this is what we've got today, after all of that kind of mapped out. We've got essentially young earthers and old earthers. So the young earth creationists are people who think that there was a single special creation that occurred several thousand years ago, and they're the people who believe in the literal biblical view. So if we go back to that quote from Good Omens, which is a great book, by the way, and it's super funny if people haven't read it, they're the people who believe Reverend Usher's counting all of the begats and begots, and the earth started in 4004 BC. And they literally believe that that's the truth. The old earthers actually believe modern science's position that the earth is 4.5 billion years old, give or take a couple billion years, but they don't believe that one species can evolve into another species. So they still believe that species were created by God, but somehow they figure that it's happened within the time frame that modern scientists have given to the Earth, that the age that we have given to the Earth. I'm not quite sure how they make that all work, but I thought that was really interesting. So we've got the young Earthers and the old Earthers, but they both share the belief that one species cannot evolve from another. But just when you thought it couldn't get any more confusing, there's yet a third kind of creationist. But I'm going to let you get a word in edgewise.
No. Go ahead, please. Elaborate on the third version of crazy. I'm sorry, creationist.
So there are also these people who call themselves, well, I don't know if they call themselves this or if they've been ascribed these categories by other people, but they call them day age and gap creationists. And basically what that means is a day in Genesis, instead of it being like a 24-hour day, it's a very, very long period of time. You've probably heard that theory before.
Sure.
Or there were long gaps of time between the days of creation. So maybe they were 24-hour days, but there were thousands of years between those 24-hour days. But just like the other creationists, they also believe that one organism cannot evolve into another. So like the old Earth creationists, they also buy into the belief that the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, give or take a few years. But all three of these different types of modern creationists don't believe, bottom line, that there's a sole ancestor that we all evolved from.
I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me.
There's another category that I thought was very interesting that I had never heard before, and it's a group called theistic evolutionists. Have you ever heard of these people?
No.
So, you laugh, but I actually kind of realized that this is probably where I fall. So we were talking about, when we were talking about doing this, we were talking about, what are those people again? Why am I blocking them? Intelligent design. And I said to you, oh, I think I'm probably, you know, I've kind of been describing myself as someone who probably kind of buys into intelligent design. No, I'm not. When I actually looked it up, I've been so wrong, and I should have educated myself better, because I'm so not a supporter of intelligent design.
Intelligent design is nothing more than bullshit way to try to make creationism sound like science, and it's not.
Right. So, and for those who don't know either of us very well, I'm the polytheist on the show. So I do believe that there's some kind of divine spark in all of this. I don't have to put a label on it. I've kind of gotten to that place where I'm comfortable not having to put a label on it. And I think that theistic evolution probably best describes it for me, but this is what it is. So widespread among modern theologians, it's the idea that God is the creator, but he works through the process of evolution as revealed by modern science. And it actually says that the article that I found on this, this website that I took all this from says that the majority of Christian seminaries do not teach the biblical literalist creation. They actually teach this idea that God or however you define God works through
flying spaghetti monster.
There you go. Works through the processes of modern science and evolution.
Let me ask you, because this is the point of Dawkins, or one of his many points, though. Where did God come from?
And you know I can't answer that.
Right. Why do we need there to be divine intervention at all?
I don't know that everybody needs that. I think that some of us need a belief that there's something bigger than ourselves. I know you don't need that. I need that. That's important to me.
Okay.
And, you know, I am also comfortable enough in that place and in my skin that it's okay for me that you don't believe that, and I don't have to force that on you.
Well, then, you know, let's move this along to exactly that point.
But wait, there's more. Because we haven't talked about intelligent design yet.
Okay.
Or do you want to?
Let me sum up intelligent design.
Oh, okay. Wait. And I'll tell you if there's anything I have to add. So you go for it.
I gotta find the court case. Kitzmiller versus Dover Area School District. First direct challenge brought in the United States, federal courts testing public school district policy that required the teaching of intelligent design. The ruling concluded that intelligent design is not science, permanently barred the board from maintaining the intelligent design policy in any school within the Dover Area School District, from requiring teachers to denigrate or disparage the scientific theory of evolution, and from requiring teachers to refer to a religious alternative theory known as intelligent design. So there it is, right there. Religious alternative theory known as intelligent design.
And so for those of us who are not great with geography, Dover is where?
This was in Pennsylvania, I believe.
And does it apply, and does this ruling apply nationally? That's my other question.
Yeah, it was federal court, right? So.
Okay. I'm not trying to grill you. I really don't know because I didn't look at this particular.
No. It's okay. That's intelligent design. It is nothing more than creationism dressed up in some scientific mumbo-jumbo and presented as actual scientific theory, which it's not.
So going back to the National Center for Science Education, which is where I got all of the stuff that I looked at, they pretty much say the same thing. So they say that it's the successor to the creation science movement of the 1960s. And it started to get really popular in the 1980s and then really peaked in its popularity in the 90s. Interestingly enough, people who are theistic evolutionists, that thing that I was just talking about that I realized that's probably what I am, they are not welcome in the intelligent design movement.
No, because you're not Christian.
Well, not just that. And actually, so the bulk of the theistic evolutionists actually are Christian.
Yeah.
But probably just because simple majority, most people who are religious are Christian, at least in the United States. But the difference is that people who preach, practice, and teach intelligent design don't believe that the universe evolved, or the universe, you know, that evolution selection is a process. They don't believe that that's actually what happens.
The universe came into being 6,000 years ago, bang.
Well, so what they say is that highly complex phenomena demonstrate the direct action of the hand of God. So in other words, complexity in nature can't be explained through natural causes. So they're basically saying natural selection is not true. It requires the guidance of an intelligent agent. So what they're basically saying is for evolution to occur, God has to act directly. There has to be direct involvement and direction from God. It's not God acting through the process of natural selection and evolution as defined by Darwin, which is what the theistic evolutionists are saying. Theistic evolutionists support the idea of Darwinism and just basically say that the firecracker was lit by God versus the firecracker was lit by who knows what.
It just was.
Right, right. So that's the difference between a theistic evolutionist and someone who is not involving deity or theism in the process at all. That's basically it, is that someone who doesn't involve theism at all says the firecracker was lit. Theistic evolutionists say the firecracker was lit by some divine spirit somewhere. Intelligent design says the hand of God directed it every step of the way.
And it's important. It's not just the hand of God. It's the hand of the Christian God. Specifically, it's the hand of their interpretation of the Christian God. Usually
right.
Evangelical, you know, and movements of that nature.
And
because,
I would say...
I want to be clear here, right? Like, if you go check out Answers in Genesis. I don't know if you know about these guys, but...
Oh, no, I actually was going to put a link up to them on our website, too.
Don't do that, because then it gets in the... Spell it out, don't put up a link, and the reason is that it'll get spidered, and then it helps actually boost their...
Okay.
Their search engine optimization. Not that it really matters if one of us, you know, for this, but it's just, you know, it's my little fuck you.
So actually, the link that happened to pop up when I was doing some searching was... Are we anti-science?
Well, yeah.
And yeah, as a matter of fact,
you are.
You are.
But But no, where I wanted to go for a minute, though, right, is that they spend an awful lot of time tearing down gap theory, old world creationists, theistic creation, all of this stuff, right? And this is my point.
It is important to recognize, and you're saying it, and I'm just going to kind of bring it back. Answers in Genesis, they are young earth creationists. They are fundamentalists who believe that the earth is 6,000 years old and that Reverend Usher had it right, and there was one creation in the Garden of Eden, period, end of paragraph.
Yep.
So, sorry to interrupt, but go ahead. I totally derailed your train of thought. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
So, but I think what, where you were going with that is that the bottom line is that they are uber-conservative, right-wing, fundamentalist Christians who are completely anti-science.
Right.
And there's no room in their tent for anyone who doesn't buy into their particular brand of creationism.
And so when people say that we've got to be tolerant and stuff, I would say, not really. Not so much.
You know, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about in terms of tolerance last week. Not when it hurts people. And in this place, it hurts our brains. And it hurts our academic standing in the world, and it hurts our ability to continue to be competitive in the sciences.
Yep.
It hurts our ability to grow intellectually when we embrace anti-science like this.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a little bit, right? There's a few things. One of the things that you'll see the most in creationist literature is that evolution is a theory, right? Because that's what we refer to it as, the theory of evolution.
Which is actually really not true, because you can look at, for, I always think of fruit flies, right? Because you can do generation, and generation of fruit flies in a very short period of time,
yeah,
and watch the process of evolution occurring before your eyes.
Yes.
And people may not want to be compared to fruit flies because that's not very flattering, but there's direct evidence of the theory of evolution. I mean, if we want to be a little nicer about it, what did Darwin looked at finches, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And finches have a short enough lifespan that, again, you know, you can look at several generations and see evolution taking place.
Right, yeah. I mean, that was the whole point of, that was the whole point of his trip to the Galapagos and, you know, everything wrote for Origin of Species.
And that's what differentiated his work from the theory that was proposed by that earlier naturalist that I mentioned, is that Darwin actually was able to show evolution of a species in his work, because he was able to directly observe it.
Yep.
So, but we were talking about tolerance, and we were talking about how tolerance of being anti-science essentially dumbs us down and makes us less competitive and makes us backward.
Yes, it does.
I, you know, one point that I would like to make as the polytheist in this conversation is that I think that you can have religious beliefs or spiritual beliefs and still be a science-minded person. I mean, I think the thing that's really amazing about being a thoughtful and thinking human being is that you can hold two conflicting beliefs, and you can rationalize that. I know that there's stuff in religious beliefs that aren't necessarily borne out in scientific fact, and I'm okay with that, because when I'm treating a patient, when I'm making decisions about what to do from a scientific standpoint, I'm not acting on belief. I'm acting on evidence.
Right, right. I would hope
and
so.
And I'm okay with holding both of those things in my mind and understanding that they come from two different parts of my humanity. And that's okay.
Yes.
I don't know. That probably sounds a little irrational, and I'm not quite sure how to marry that together, but I think it's okay to have that cognitive dissonance.
Listen,
you know,
90% of the people on the planet are religious, believe in something, right? The number of atheists isn't, you know, it's never higher than about 10%, and that's going to be in the Western world. You know, it's much lower in some of the other parts of the world.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, most people are religious. You know what? I get along with most people.
And I would say, quite honestly, that the bulk of the scientists are who are continuing to do this work and continuing to forward this work, the bulk of them probably have religious beliefs.
Certainly, I've heard several who are and several who aren't.
But they're not sacrificing science on the altar of religion. And as someone who holds spirituality as a really important part of herself, it's not okay for me that we sacrifice science and progress to any of our gods.
Okay, I agree with that. I agree with that.
So, I guess kind of along those lines, so I found a couple of shocking numbers. I couldn't find any numbers more up to date than this, but this was from a Gallup poll in 2012, and this is going back to evolution. 46% of Americans essentially ascribe to young Earth creationist beliefs. They believe that the Earth is less than 10,000 years old, and they believe that God created humans in their present form. 46% of Americans. 32% of Americans believe that humans evolved with some sort of guidance from God. And then 15% of Americans believe that humans evolved and God had no part in the process. So I look at that and I see that almost half of our country is anti-science. And maybe I'm making too big of a statement. You know, maybe I'm extrapolating that out too far. I don't know that someone who has that belief would necessarily come in and refuse a course of antibiotics. Or
probably not.
That they, you know, or that they would refuse a joint replacement if it was going to help their arthritis. But
no, the more telling, and this is, unfortunately, this goes back to 2005, but from Gallup.
Uh-huh.
All right. If the public schools in your community taught theory of creationism, that is, that the idea of human beings were created by God in their present form did not evolve from other species of animals, would you be upset? 22% would be, and 76% would not be upset.
Oh, God.
See, that's
horrible.
That's where I think it really comes into play, right there.
So what would be really interesting for me would be to, and I don't know if this information is out there. It probably is. I don't know. Maybe it's not. It'd be really interesting to see how other countries fall along those lines if that question were asked elsewhere in the world.
We are the most religious of all the Western nations.
Right.
Aside from maybe Italy. And so you can kind of, well, let's be honest. In France and England, you can pretty much assume that the numbers are far lower.
That's just hideously embarrassing.
That's the way it goes.
Well, you know, so I would, along those lines, I just was looking for creationism in textbooks. And some of the stuff that I saw when I went looking was just so shocking.
Well, let's talk about it. Alabama, 1996, State Board of Education adopted textbook sticker that was a disclaimer about evolution and has since been revised. In 2008 in California, ruling in favor of the University of California in the case Association of Christian Schools International versus Roman Stearns, agreeing with the university's position that various religious books on U.S. history and science from A. Becca Books and Bob Jones University Press should not be used for college prep classes.
Oh my God.
You don't thank God, right? The case was filed in spring 2006 by the Association of Christian Schools International against the University of California, claiming religious discrimination over the rejection of 5 courses as college preparatory instruction. I assume that what that means is that the classes weren't considered for credit. Although I don't know that for sure. On August 8th, 2008, the judge entered summary judgment against the plaintiff upholding the University of California standards. The university found the books, quote, didn't encourage critical thinking skills and failed to cover major topics, themes, and components of U.S. history, unquote. Florida, 2008, State Board of Education adopted new science standards. These science standards explicitly require the teaching of scientific theory of evolution, whereas the previous standards only referenced evolution using the word change over time. See, Florida's
wow.
not all bad. No, see, they're not all bad. Georgia, 2002, there was a case to have the following sticker removed from public school textbooks. I'm quoting here. This textbook contains material on evolution. Evolution is a theory, not a fact, regarding the origin of living things. This material should be approached with an open mind, studied carefully, and critically considered.
Okay, I found an awesome refutation to that. Warning, this sticker contains stupidity. It may cause a general decrease in intelligence, uncontrolled vomiting and nausea, and possible future stickers on the theory of the existence of dinosaurs. Please approach with extreme caution and burn if possible.
Kansas.
Yeah, there we go again. Kansas.
1999, Kansas School Board of Education changed their science education standards to remove any mention of biological macroevolution, the age of Earth, or the origin and early development of the universe. So that evolutionary theory no longer appeared in statewide standardizing texts, and it was left to 305 school districts in Kansas whether or not to teach it.
So, I don't want to sound like a capitalist, but how the hell do these people expect their children to then go to a real university and become competitive adults in the business place?
Yeah, well, because then what happened was in 2000, there was a revolt at the polls, and so in 2001, the board then voted 7-3 to reinstate the teaching of biological evolution and the origin of the Earth. However, in 2005, the board drafted new science standards that required critical analysis of evolution, including scientific evidence refuting the theory, which opponents analyzed as effectively stating that intelligent design should be taught. New standards also provided a definition for science that does not preclude supernatural explanations and were approved by a 6-4 vote in 2005. Incidentally, that was the day the school board from the first court case I was talking about in Pennsylvania failed
right.
to be reelected in Pennsylvania. Okay, so then Kansas State Republican primary elections in 2006, moderate Republicans took control away from anti-evolution conservatives. In 2007, then, the board approved a new curriculum which removed any reference to intelligent design. In the words of Bill Wagnon, the board chairman, today the Kansas Board of Education returned its curriculum standards to mainstream science. Hallelujah.
So, here's the other thing. We have a shortage of money to go to our schools, right? And we're wasting all this money litigating back and forth about stuff like that.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, and then I can come back to this. What is the purpose of Answers in Genesis when you look at their website?
So, hang on just a second, and let me go to their homepage and see what they say.
That's not what they say. What did they do?
Well, I mean, when I look at it, I think that they are trying to promote the young Earth creationist view.
Yeah, but specifically how and why?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I'm not sure what you're trying to lead me to.
Oh, yeah, well, to sell
softball it, man.
to sell the books that they write.
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, I look at it and it's like, the lie, evolution.
Yeah.
For $13.99.
Right.
The Creation Museum DVD collection on sale for $59.99.
Yep.
The Young Earth, 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, so interestingly enough, right, then I took a look at a couple of things, and this is from Slate, right?
We love Slate. Political Gabfest, yay! Go ahead.
All right. Tax dollars at work, right? Tax-funded creationism. State-by-state breakdown. Arizona, as many as 15 schools that teach creationism may be participating in the state's tax credit scholarship program for disabled children. Arkansas, there's at least two. Colorado, there's eight. Florida, at least 164 schools teach creationism while participating in the state's tax credit scholarship program for disabled children and children
Holy
from
crap.
Low-income families. Georgia, at least 34 schools teach creationism, same thing. Indiana, 37. Louisiana, let's get to Louisiana. The Louisiana Science Education Act of 2008 allows teachers to use supplemental textbooks and other instructional materials to help students understand, analyze, critique, and review scientific theories in an objective manner, specifically theories regarding evolution, the origins of life, global warming, and human cloning, and in fact, allowing creationist material inside the classroom.
Wow.
That's like all the public schools in Louisiana can teach it. At least 20 schools in Ohio, 5 schools in Oklahoma. Tennessee, another great state. 2012 state law permits public school teachers to teach the scientific strengths and scientific weaknesses of theory that can cause controversy. And so let's talk, I mean, this is the tactic, and this is where I really get just, I can go on about these states, but I just want to point out, California, none. Thanks.
I didn't hear any about Alaska either.
Yeah. You guys
Although, you know what? So here's the thing about Alaska. There are lots of little schools.
Oh yeah, right. Cause
that don't have a lot of oversight.
So here's the deal in California, right? There are no statutes in California specifically and exclusively deal with private home education.
Right.
As distinct from private schools.
Tons of homeschooled kids up here. God knows what they're being taught.
Right.
No pun intended.
So California is one of 12 states in which homeschooling is accomplished under a private school exemption. Home educators may establish a private school based in their home and must file for a private school affidavit with the superintendent of public instruction in California. The California statutes permits homeschooling as a species of private school education. Children enrolled in private school are exempt from attendance in public school. The following requirements apply to all private schools. Number one, the instructors must be capable of teaching, as determined by the private school administrator. The instruction
Which,
must...
if it's the same person who's teaching,
right.
i.e. mom...
Right.
No, oh!
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, even California, right? It's totally easy to do this. Now, what's interesting, though...
This is an important fact that kind of relates to what you're talking about, and I think I'm sure you know this, I'm not sure how many of our listeners, our three listeners, know this.
Soon to be two.
Right. So most of the nation's textbooks are published in Texas.
Yep.
And that means that most of the information that our kids are getting is controlled by a small number of people in Texas. So it's just really important to think about what you were saying earlier about the information that is being dispersed by Texans. And this is from an article in Newsweek that was published just last year. That means that a few Texans are steering the curriculum of the entire U.S. public school system. When the Texas Board of Education holds hearings on the adoption of textbooks, anyone can weigh in on the approval process. At a recent hearing, Becky Berger, a petroleum and mining geologist and current candidate for Texas Railroad Commissioner a year ago, objected to a draft of the high school textbook Environmental Science, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. She said that the book unjustly blamed the oil and gas industry for pollution and hence global warming, and there was no mention of the downside of renewable energy sources. The publisher was forced to tweak its textbook to gain approval. It now mentions that wind energy typically generated in the countryside can't be easily transferred to urban areas. So basically one person who works for Big Oil was able to change a textbook and was able to change information that is being dispensed to kids throughout the United States. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one person deciding that they don't agree with information about evolution, and they can do the same thing.
Well, they can try, but it looks like the courts pretty much are going to uphold the separation. That's the thing that comes across from the list of lawsuits and everything I've been looking at.
Let's hope. Here's their commentary on the federal court decision that you talked about earlier. Since the 2005 federal court decision, which ruled that intelligent design can't be taught in school because of the separation of church and state, sometimes called Scopes 2, referring back to the Scopes monkey trial for people who don't know about that, creationists have been trying to water down discussions of evolution in textbooks and the classroom instead of trying to get religion into the curriculum. They know they can't teach religion or creationism in the classroom, Branch says. This is a person that they interviewed for this article. That's why their goal is to raise all of these doubts. Of course, in college, you want discussion and open debate, but we're not talking about colleges. What you want in public school is to teach what mainstream science is right now. While the teaching of evolution may withstand these challenges, global warming is far more vulnerable because it has no constitutional protections. We've had so many court victories over the teaching of evolution because the alternative is religion. And that lets us bring the clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution, which prevents the government from promoting religious belief, Branch explains. But if a teacher wants to say that global warming is a hoax, then all we can really say is that's really bad science, because there's nothing unconstitutional about teaching really bad science.
No, there's not.
So, interesting point of view about just the whole idea of bad science and textbooks, not particularly evolution versus intelligent design.
This comes down to, you know, voting again and again and again.
Right, it does. I mean, everything we talk about comes down to voting. So the National Education for Science that I was talking about, or the National Center for Science Education that I was talking about earlier, so they were talking about strategies that people who are pushing intelligent design use. And they really try to present putting intelligent design into the classroom under these strategies. They talk about it in terms of academic freedom. They talk about it in terms of critical analysis of evolution, which is what you were saying earlier, basically saying we don't have proof, evolution is just a theory. And then they talk about teaching the strengths and weaknesses of evolution, which you mentioned earlier. So all they have to do is kind of call it into question.
Well, this is a point I was trying to make earlier, is this general misunderstanding of theory when we talk about science.
Right.
A scientific theory is a theory because very little can be proven absolutely. But all the evidence is supporting this, and that's why it's a theory, and it keeps going and going and going. But if you find evidence that disproves the theory, then we start again.
Well,
whereas the theory that God created the universe, there is no way to prove your theory. There is no scientific basis for your theory. So therefore,
it's a belief.
It's a belief.
Right.
And, you know, and this, again, I don't care what you believe. I care what you try to push into the classrooms. I care what you try to jam down all of our throats, you know, as right or wrong.
And this kind of goes back to something that you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago, which is the whole idea that when something changes in medicine, it's because we recognize that science evolves.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we're willing to look at new information, and we're willing to say, oh, there's a better way to do things.
The thing with creationism is there's no way to, like, you can believe in all this, and there's nothing to prove that you're wrong, but there is nothing to prove that you're right.
Right.
Because if you swap Allah, Yahweh, Jehovah with Flying Spaghetti Monster, we get the same effect. Although with the Flying Spaghetti Monster, you also get beer volcanoes and stripper factories.
Oh my god.
You've never heard of the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
I've heard of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. I have not spent a great deal of time exploring the theology.
That's awesome. They got a whole section on hate mail. The hate mail's hilarious.
Oh my god. Like the hate mail that we're gonna get? We haven't gotten any hate mail yet, so it's probably all going to Brian Williams.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah.
Okay, so I have one more thing about not so much about evolution and creationism, but it's kind of some stuff that that Richard Dawkins brought up in his little bit on Neil deGrasse Tyson's show, and it seems appropriate to go out on, at least to end this part of the conversation on. Have you ever heard of the Flynn effect?
No.
So the Flynn effect actually shows, there's data to actually show that intelligence, IQ, has significantly increased from 1930 to today.
Well, that only makes sense.
But Richard Dawkins says he hasn't seen any evidence of that.
Well, he might be right.
And I'm pretty convinced he's right. So there you go.
And when we come back from the break, our oh, by the way moment. All right, so what's your oh, by the way?
All right, so my oh, by the way moment is actually a shout out to episode 1. I don't know if you've seen this, but this is a new policy that is going to be put into effect by Australia.
No.
Okay, so this is as reported by CNN, but I've actually seen it from multiple different Good Lord, I can't even speak. Multiple different news sites. In Australia, parents who refuse to vaccinate their children can lose up to $11,000 of welfare benefits a year under new government policy, Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott has announced. And this was just last week or earlier this week. Currently, parents can choose to opt out of vaccinations for medical or religious reasons or by stating that they are conscientious objectors and still receive taxpayer-funded health care benefits. Under the new no jab, no pay policy, the exemption has, as a conscientious objector, will be removed starting January 2016. The choice made by families not to immunize their children is not supported by public policy or medical research, nor should such action be supported by taxpayers in the form of child care payments, said Abbott in a joint statement with Social Services Minister Scott Morrison. Thousands of families could lose out on welfare payments, with the Australian government estimating more than 39,000 children under the age of 7 have not been vaccinated because of their parents' objections. The number of children in Australia who have not received vaccinations against measles and other diseases has almost doubled in the past decade, according to the government. Anti-vaccination campaigns have recently gained traction in Western countries. Some parents believe the shots cause autism, but this theory has been widely discredited. Existing exemptions on medical or religious grounds will continue, said Abbott, but guidelines on religious exemptions will be tightened. It requires the formal positions of that religious body being advised to the government and approved by the government. This is a very significant narrowing, Morrison told reporters in Sydney on Sunday. He added that no mainstream religious organizations have made any formal objection to immunizations. In response to the announcement, more than 7,000 people have signed a petition, in opposition to the reforms.
Yeah, of course.
So, the thing that is really interesting to me, first of all, is that a government would take this big a step. The other thing is, some arguments that I've seen online kind of harken back to something that you brought up in our original conversation around vaccination, which is that it's not generally the people who are poor enough that they're receiving government aid who are making the decision not to vaccinate. Certainly in our society, it's more a case of the affluent who are choosing not to vaccinate their children.
Right.
So the argument is this really hitting the people who are making the decision not to vaccinate?
Well,
so I just thought it was really interesting.
So yeah, that's the problem, right? It's kind of a good step, kind of, you know, same old crap though, where blame the poor.
Right.
My oh, by the way, moment was similar in vain. Disneyland and the measles outbreak.
Oh, no, that's so funny that we both ended up on the same idea.
But if California public health officials are anxiously counting the days until Friday, hoping no new measles cases surface so authorities can declare the widespread Disneyland-based outbreak over. Before a pronouncement can be made, two back-to-back incubation periods totaling 42 days must have passed without any additional B3 strain measles being reported. California lawmakers are pursuing legislation erasing the personal belief exemption that allows parents to avoid vaccinating their children.
So we both ended up on vaccines. That's kind of funny. I thought based on your comment to me earlier that we were going to end up on Rand Paul.
Oh, fuck that guy.
You know, all I have to say is on the subject of... Oh, go ahead.
No, okay, so... There is that thing that turns out... It turns out that Rand Paul, board-certified ophthalmologist, right? Ophthalmologist. It turns out the board he's certified is the board that he started, and there's seven doctors on it.
Right.
So, but that's not the problem. The problem is that he claimed to also be board-certified by the National Organization for Ophthalmologists, and he's not. That's the part that is really kind of disturbing because, dude, you lied about it. I mean, you straight up lied about it, and when you got called on it, you acted the asshole. You know, you did the thing that all men will recognize. You went right to righteous indignation to cover up the fact that you got caught with your dick in your hand.
I actually kind of got into a little Facebook bicker with somebody about this yesterday, and he pointed out that, you don't have to be board certified to be a quote unquote real doctor, which I thought was an interesting concept. And it is true. You don't have to be board certified to practice as a physician, but I sure as hell personally would choose a board certified doctor over one who is not board certified.
Right.
Just
but,
saying.
But I saw that interchange and I got to be honest. I think that guy built a straw man argument, right? Which was, oh, well, it doesn't have to be board certified. So, you know, what's the big deal? The big
right.
deal is that he said he was certified by the national board.
Well, and he was up until, I think, 2005, and then he had a little hissy fit and got angry with the national board and left the national board.
But continued to imply that he was still
that he was board certified, correct.
By that group and not by his own little group.
Right.
And that's the thing that I think that people should be paying attention to.
Right.
Is that, you know... It has nothing to do with whether or not he needs to be board certified. It has nothing to do with whether or not he's a good ophthalmologist. Wouldn't
right.
know, right? I would have no way of judging that, and I don't even care. What I am judging him on is the fact that you made a claim that turned out to be false, and, you know, when Brian Williams did that, he lost his job.
Right.
When generals in the military have done that through wearing medals that they actually were not entitled to be wearing, they lost their job. So you, sir, are a douchebag.
Can I tell you, if I claimed to be board certified and was not, I would not just lose my job, I would lose my license.
Right.
So.
He doesn't care about his license because he doesn't practice.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I get it. But, you know, he maintains, you know, what he needs to maintain to be able to keep the MD attached to his name, you know, because it gives him more gravitas.
It's just that whole misrepresentation of who you are and what your truth is.
By the way, which state is Rand Paul from?
I have no freaking idea. I think it's Kentucky, isn't it?
It's Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
Kentucky.
Kentucky. What are you doing?
In October of 1999, the Kentucky Department of Education replaced the word evolution with change over time and state school standards. All right, well, hey, you know, thanks for listening.
And there's no Neil Gaiman quote to go out on, but I do want to say, if you haven't read Good Omens, it's a great romp, and it's about the apocalypse. So, no zombies involved. None whatsoever.
Apocalypse was never so much fun.
And on that note, have a great week, and we'll see you next week, and we'll try not to talk about religion next week. I think we're kind of burnt out.